Hey guys, this is Schmitty again with another episode. Actually, this is episode 190 of the podcast called Talkin' Schmidt.
Holy crap.
Oh my goodness.
Take everybody's girlfriend.
The NorCal legend.
We usually do skateboarding. We mostly do skateboarding. Sometimes we'll throw in a fucking punk rocker like last week with Chris Rest of RKL. But we consistently keep it skateboarding here. So if you're into the skateboarding stuff, this is the spot.
I love Mr. Neil Blender, man.
And today on the podcast, we got Kevin Romar. He's a DJ for Hobson. But first and foremost, he is a skateboarder. And he's got possibly the best Nollie 360 in the game.
Oh, this is the guy we're looking for.
Dude put out a lot of rad shit, a lot of good parts, most recently for Blind Skateboards, but more recently he said, peace out.
Bye, Felicia.
We're going to talk to him today, kids, and get to hear his story and find out what's been going on. I've been keeping it busy around here. I don't know if any of you have checked out. I'm doing a podcast with my friend Christian Cooper. We're doing Skaters on Baseball. We recently just did one with Matt Sharkey. Check that out if you're into baseball at all. A lot of you may not be, and that's fine too. Also, just put out a really cool piece with Peter Hewitt and Bailey. If you haven't seen that, go check that out at the Thrasher website. Still watching with Peter Hewitt and Bailey. About to do another one with Diego the Butcher. Same trip, but more on the streets. So keep an eye out for that. They're cooking up another Peystone Invitational at some point. The DIY series is going full throttle for season two. That's about it. I hope Sacramento makes it right for E40 because they played him wrong, but the Warriors are about to put out the beam. Yeah. But before we start, I want to give a shout out to our new advertiser, John Joseph Van Landingham of Southern Georgia, who has been skating since 1986 and blowing glass since 96. His glass is homemade in the USA, and you can find out more info from him on his Instagram or his Facebook. Someday he may even have one of them OG websites to peep. Anyway, I'm super hyped. He reached out to me and stoked to get someone who's down for the cause. So with that, John Joseph Van Landingham, keep it going. And like Albino says, provoke the stoke.
Provoking the stoke.
So yeah, anyway, we are always down for advertising to help support what we're doing here.
Blood Wizard. Blood Wizard. Blood Wizard. Blood Wizard! Shop.bloodwizard.com.
Tickety-tack.
Hey, it's Corey at Blue Plate, 3218 Mission Street. Come see us. Meatloaf, fried chicken, deviled eggs, Dollar Olympia beers. We're here every day of the week. We got a garden and we got smiles on our faces. Come let us make you happy.
What's up? This is Kevin Romar and you are listening to Talkin' Schmidt. Let's get it.
Hey.
Talkin' Schmidt.
I'm already not watching.
It's cool. Like, tonight is the night.
Damn, this is like the coolest thing I'm ever gonna do.
I wouldn't say it was fun.
What do you mean? Well, Christian Fletcher's younger brother.
Fuck the Dodgers.
All big dogs in. What do you think, Dolan?
We on? Schmitty?
Talkin' Schmidt.
Alpha Macaroni.
Most of these guys, their opinion don't matter.
Talkin' Schmidt, right?
It's skateboarding.
I remember that.
Talkin' Schmidt.
What are Yuns doing?
Holy shit.
Skateboarding homies.
No, Schmitty, you can't jump in.
What is happening?
Gregory.
Yes, we are.
Wi-Fi check one, Wi-Fi check two.
All right, we're back. My next No, I don't say we're back. That's that other show. All right. Next guest here from the land of Cypress, California. Pro skateboarder with that DJ bug. He's been doing a lot of DJing, actually, and he's got some of the most stylish board control going big in the game. According to his birth records, he was literally born one day before September 11th, This is Kevin Romar. Good.
Hey, yeah, man. Yeah, Schmitty.
How are you?
I'm good, brother. Just another day in paradise, man. Just living it up.
Hey, well, this is a world premiere of Talking Schmidt, so we're doing that collab unintentional.
Hey, I like that plug, man.
Before we get into it, I want to talk to you about your history of nicknames. Like, have you had like tons of nicknames? Because I was thinking like Kevin Romar, it's kind of built for a nickname like Romy, K Rome, or like, I don't know. Have you had tons?
Oh yeah, man. There's K Ro, Romar, Romy Rome. Dude, the list goes on. Yeah. Fromar.
Oh, Fromar. Yeah. Has anyone just ever called you the Nolly 3 guy?
A couple times, yeah, for sure.
I don't know who he is, but he's got the Nolly 3.
There's Nolly 3 over there. Yeah.
Sick, dude. Well, thanks so much for joining, man. I know we've been talking about this for a little bit and you were laid up for a while and shit. So are you rolling around again?
Yeah, rolling around right now, back into skate mode. You know, taking it easy. I'm not like full on going crazy, but, you know, just easing it in there.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's start in Cyprus. What was it like growing up in the city of Cyprus?
So I'm from Long Beach. Dude. Then I moved to Cyprus. So okay. I'm from two worlds. So I started skating in Cyprus, and that's where everyone knows me from. So okay. You know, I just, you know, it's both ways. But dude, Cyprus is like a little city right next to Long Beach and Huntington and everything like that. And it's just a super cool little small little city that has a gang of skateboarders, man. Like, it was crazy.
Is so that where Theotis is from?
Theotis is from he's from like Gardena or something like that. Oh, somewhere next to Compton or something like that. But
okay.
Yeah. But yeah, man, it's a cool little city. Cool little dope skateboard city.
Well, how did you get the skateboard bug? Like, was it in school? Somebody else had one. You saw it in a movie, or like, what drew you to it to make you want to like figure it out?
Yeah, I was playing sports at the time, and I was playing football, and I was coming home from school, and some kid just was skating by me, and I had no idea what like a skateboard was in my little world of sports, and he was just going by me, and I was coming home from school, and he just like ollied up the curb. He went down the curb, then went ollied up. He ollied up the curb, and I was just like blown away. I was like, "Whoa! I need to get a skateboard now." Like, I've never seen anything like physically like he defied physics right there. And I was like, "Yo!" So I went to the skate shop that I live right next to, called Furnace Skate Shop.
Shout out!
Oh yeah, I know Furnace.
And I literally just hung out there for like every day, just like so fascinated of that world. And I eventually got like a hand-me-down board from them. And just, you know, next thing's next, bro. Like, I got into that world and I was like hooked from that moment.
So is this in junior high? What age?
I was, junior high, like fifth grade. No, elementary.
Okay.
Yeah. Fifth, sixth grade.
what were some of your earliest memories? Like, did you like, you know, I'm older, obviously, but we had the curb cuts out in front of our house. That's how we learned how to ollie, kind of use it as a jump ramp. Like, was there like bombing a hill on your butt or any, like, what were the early moments that you were like, man, this is just all new and fun. And like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Or did you just go straight to the Nolly 3? Like, nah, dude, fuck all that.
No, dude, I think, I started with the ollie first, but I would, you know, before all the internet stuff, I would, you know, go on to Google and Yahoo, and I would type in like how to ollie and how to kickflip, and I print out the paper, and I would just like literally print it out, and I just like a step by step guide, and I would just read this paper over and over and over in my garage, and I would just like practice ollies. It took me like a year to learn how to ollie, but
did you do it stationary or moving?
Stationary for sure,
like on the carpet or on cement,
like in the garage floor. So okay. Kind of like, yeah, cement. Uh-huh. And yeah, it was like I had a Nash board first, so that was the first board I had. But then I eventually stepped it up after I learned an ollie. I was like, yo, I see all these other guys have like they have like dope ass boards, you know, and I'm like on this board that doesn't even roll. Like for Walmart board.
Okay. So
yeah,
but then Furnace, yeah, I just gave that to you.
That was after.
So I got a board from Walmart. My mom bought me a board.
So Furnace gave you your first legit board.
Like legit board, for sure. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. And then from there, man, I just kept reading this paper and I just kept like learning how to like do tricks off Yahoo pretty much. Yeah.
Yes.
And so I just would read this thing over and over and over again until I got two tricks down, and then that, you know, leads to other things and so on and so forth.
I was just emailing with Diego, the butcher, Butchieri, and his email is at yahoo.com. And I was like, dude, are you serious? Like, I didn't know it still existed. I was like, Yahoo's still around?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I was printing out papers like 2001 when Yahoo was like big time, you know? That was like right after AOL, like, you know, you plug into the Wi-Fi and get on the AOL or Yahoo, so...
So have you kind of like grown up in the technical world? Like, is technology like you've been drawn to it? I mean, if you're already like on Google and Yahoo and printing out things, it seems like it's already in your DNA that like, you know, you're going to like figure shit out through that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely technology driven. I think I was on computers super young, man. I was using computers around like 9 years old. So, yeah, once I figured out how to get on online, that was a wrap.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kind of the same, man. I was always early shit. So who were some of your earliest influences? Like, did you see some pretty good dudes in your area, or did you see a shop video or a magazine or something that you were like, fuck, who's that dude or something like that?
For sure. So I used to go to El Dorado Skate Park in Long Beach, and that's where I would see every pro come by there, because that was the only park that had lights. It would stay on till 10. And that was like one of the first like actual skate parks back in 2000s.
Mm.
So I would see Terry Kennedy, Evan Hernandez, Scott Kane, all the bootleg dudes, Bastion's Knox would be up there, Bastion's Alibanzi, P. Rod, all these dudes would just come by. Wow. I didn't know who they were. And I was just like so blown away by like their style. You know, I was like, whoa, like I've never seen a skateboard style like this. So I was drawn into it right away. And Evan would pull up in like these Benzes with spinning rims. And I would just be like, what? This is from skateboarding. This is crazy. So my world was like, I was already into hip hop and stuff like that early on. Mm. So when I saw that, I was like, this is like the epitome of hip hop and skateboarding. I was like, they got the Benzes, they got Boost mobile phones chirping everybody.
Yeah.
And I was like, dang, this is sick. You know, and everyone's just like coming together. It was way different than sports for sure. Like way different than football, basketball. Yeah. And I was just like, yeah, I went to that skate park every day just to see those guys. Then I eventually figured out like who they were, and I got Baker 2G and all these other videos. But yeah, I was like, these are my favorite skaters like from here on out.
Big money, big cars, man. We used to crank that shit. What was it like for you, you mentality wise, going from like a coach and a team's, you know, that whole sports thing is like, whether it's baseball, football or whatever, it's like you're a team, there's drills, there's all this stuff, to like having your own, like, I'm just going to go learn this in my garage by myself. Like, did you like that or did it feel lonely?
I loved it because I was like, I was free from like drilling, you know, people would like, you know, coaches drill you to do something and you can like, you do, sometimes they can make you cry. You know what I mean? At a young age, it's like, they're really trying to get you to be focused and stuff like that. But at the end, it did help because it, you know, it gave me a lot of like
stamina,
mental, like toughness to, you know, jump downstairs and stuff like that. So all of it helped. But when I got out of it, I was like, I felt so much more freedom. I was like, I'm away from all this craziness. You know, I'm able to just, because my childhood bringing up was pretty gnarly in general. So I had to figure out like how to balance everything. And skateboarding kind of saved me from just jumping off the cliff pretty much. So, yeah.
Did you come from, were your parents divorced or?
Yeah. So they'd been divorced for, I was 9 when they got divorced. So I just, you know, that's an age where you just don't know what's going on. You know what I mean? You're just like, what is in the world is happening, and then you have to go to court and you have to sit you have to figure out like who you want to stay with, like mom or dad, and then you have to say as a 9-year-old, you know. And
that's gnarly.
Yeah. And then I had to switch schools because you know money problems in the household, so I had to do all that. And then, you know, trying to do sports it's just all these rages in your brain. Like, what in the world am I, what is my purpose? And, you know, and then skateboarding saved my life, man. For sure.
It seems like it saved so many of our lives.
Literally. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I would have ended up in a bad situation if I didn't pick up skateboarding, because I was already going like this in a sense.
Right.
Grades were bad. You know, I was getting into trouble. I was getting into all kinds of insanity.
Yeah. Like, is there a lot of temptation to, like, in Long Beach, it seems like there's a lot of like the drugs and gangs and different things like that. Is there like that temptation when you're seeing dudes driving around in these bling bling, all that stuff? Like, man, yeah, that could be the easy way out.
For sure. Yeah. I was getting in fights when I was a little kid, just for random reasons. And I was just, I don't know. I was just a lot of stuff going on. And yeah, then you have to go play sports, and then you got coaches drilling you and your parents drilling you. And it's just like, I got to get away from all of this. And yeah, when skateboarding came in, it was around like fifth or sixth grade.
Okay.
I had already been moving around different places. I was moving around from LA to Long Beach, to Cypress, all these different locations, but switching schools each and every time. So I had to make new friends, and I was getting picked on, and I was like, dude, what the heck, man? And yeah, I just, you know, I bleached my hair just to try to fit in with the society. I had my hair blonde at one point. Everyone does it now, but I was way ahead of the curve back then. But yeah, once I figured out like what my purpose was to do, you know, once I found that skateboard, I was like, all right, it's game time.
Okay.
And, Hell yeah.
What was like the early moment of you taking it to the next level? Like, did your homie get a video camera? Did you like learn a trick that somebody that was really good was impressed by? Like, did a shop give you something for free? Like, what was something that like early on kind of kept the stoke to another level? Like, oh man, like opened a door, like, let's go, you know?
So about like after I learned the ollie, then I learned how to kickflip in the garage. I went to Furnace Skate Shop, and I told him, I was like, hey, I can do a kickflip. And my boy Justin McLean was there. We've been friends for a little bit. Rest in peace, Justin. And he took me outside, and Dennis Ballou, he was one of the guys that works at Furnace. He saw me go outside and land a kickflip off the curb, pretty much like second try or something like that. I don't remember how many tries it took, but he was stoked. He was like, this little kid can like kickflip. This was before like any little kid could do, besides like Knox and Evan and things like that. He's like, man, that's tight, man. You can kickflip. Let's give you a little shop board. Let's give you a furnace board. And I was like, all right, sick, man. Like, yeah. And now I went home, and I like, it was like a trophy. You know what I mean? Like, yes. I'm like, I feel like I'm sponsored. I thought I was sponsored, but I had more work to do. But yeah, they kept hooking me up, though. They kept giving me little hand-me-down boards and stuff to keep me stoked up to keep skating.
Uh-huh.
And then that eventually landed into a real sponsor with Furnace. But right, they were the ones that like kept me going for sure. The skate shop, Furnace all day.
Yeah, I can't say enough good things. Everyone knows that I love skate shops. I mean, just the camaraderie when you go into a shop, and like you said, maybe you were hanging out there in the early days and getting so much, asking questions, watching videos, having like camaraderie of dudes coming in and out, seeing different board shapes and feeling it and standing on it. Like, all that stuff is like something that Amazon and the internet can never replace.
No, that's facts, man. Like, actually holding a skateboard, like even a pro, like a pro's old board, and that's the board that you're holding when you're a little kid, that stokes you out so much. It's like seeing somebody on television like give you something, you know, you're like, dang, that's pretty sick. Uh-huh. And that opens a whole bunch of doors mentally, you know, as a kid.
For sure.
You're like, dang, I can do anything. Especially if a pro gives you a board, you're like, dang, bro, like, this is sick, man.
Right?
Yeah.
So Furnace is the first shop sponsor. Did you get like what was your like first product sponsor, like trucks, wheels, board or something, shoes? Probably not shoes.
I used to get audio at first, but that was through my friend. He hooked me up through that. But it was really? Like a bunch of, yeah, bro. Yeah. Like 2002,
2003.
Damn. Like, yeah.
Getting shoes is so sick.
Bro, it happened really fast. Like, a lot of things started happening really, really quick with skateboarding. And I was just kind of like, whoa, like, this is happening this way. This is happening this way. And that's, like, where my mind was, you know? In school, I was like, all I wanted to do was skate. But I had to go through a whole bunch of different random products I don't remember the names. You know, when you first start, everybody wants to give you stuff when you go to these little contests. Like, here's some trucks. Here are these. I don't know what they're called, but then eventually it landed through audio, and then it landed through Fury Trucks, and then it landed through a couple Flow. Like, I was getting Baker stuff, like through the warehouse stuff first, and then Evan Hernandez would give me some stuff, and you know, all those guys at El Dorado that I used to see.
Okay.
So, and I saw them at an early age, so that helped me later on in my career.
Do you have a mentor or anything that's like older that's helping you not kind of make wrong decisions if like things are starting to heat up and everyone's offering you like, don't go with that, that's whack, save yourself for something a little better, or any of that mentality?
No, I kind of had to figure it out myself, which is a good thing. And then later, you know, like I started hanging around Darrell Stanton and like Scott Cain, and those guys were like, I would go on, you know, skate trips with them and just skate missions with them. And they would just, you know, give me the game and I would just soak it all in. Like, damn, that's pretty cool, man.
Was that when Darrell was on Real?
When he was on Real. Yeah.
Oh man.
That's... And he had a house. He had a house in Long Beach. Yeah.
When he showed up at Clipper, it was fucked. Like the shit he did on Clipper still fucked today.
Yeah. No, really. It really is.
He skated like no other, like switch shit where you're just like, wait, what? Like,
yeah, dude.
Darrell is
He's
sick.
One of my favorite skaters, man. Like, he, dude, his style is the best. You know, he does everything so like long armed and just nonchalant. And the songs he used, man. Oh, man. I loved it. Okay. Yeah. He's a good dude, man. He's good, man. He's got his own little thing going on. So,
okay. Good. Yeah. I love Darrell. I'll always shout out him.
Shout out.
So what was it? I heard Pal maybe was the first board like Flow or sponsor or something you got.
So yeah, I was getting like stuff through the Baker stuff. And then that was just like Flow stuff from one of the warehouse guys. Uh-huh. And then Pal came along and I had already been like filming a bunch of stuff. And they came in and was like, hey, we want to hook you up. And I would go on trips with Figgy and Daniel Espinoza and all these other Jordan Hoffert and stuff like that. And that was my real introduction into like the real skate world, like going on super skate missions, like Figgy stuff he was doing, grinding 21 rail, 20 stair rails. I was like, what? And what's his name? The TM, DeVille, he would, dude. Take us to the most insane spots. Like, just, you know, I don't know if you know DeVille.
Oh, hell yeah. I kicked it with him in Phoenix like a couple of weeks ago.
Okay. Yeah. He's the best, but he took me to some insane stuff and, you know, it helped me out though. And, you know, he took me to Rincon and I switched my hill that. And he was the reason, like, I was able to grow pretty much in skateboarding without me even knowing it though. But
you switch heel Rincon. Is that the first time you'd ever even been there?
Yeah, switch front heeled it. Yeah, we went there at night. And
like, hey, check out this spot. And you're like, oh, I'll switch it.
Yeah, it's like
crazy. It's a tall one, right?
Yeah, it's a tall four block.
Yeah.
Yeah, he took me there at night. We were just on a random mission. And he's like, hey, you got switch front heels, man. I think you could do it down this set. And I was like, okay, let me check it out. We went there and lit it up. I don't know if you've seen the footage. But I switch front heel it, I land it, and he misses the whole entire sequence. Like, he misses the whole thing.
Oh, he was shooting photos?
Yeah, he was shooting the sequence. But you know, it's a throwdown spot. So you got to throw down and just like, you know, do your thing.
Yeah.
I threw down. I think he was just like daydreaming or something, dude. Yeah. And I threw down and I switched front heel, caught it, turned it, landed, rolled away. Everyone was like, oh my gosh. But they knew that he missed it. So he was like, he just went like this, but no flash went off or anything. And he just looked in the distance like, oh my gosh, I missed it, dude.
Oh my
gosh. So we had to piece it together.
Holy shit.
I had to switch 180 it, then like switch front heel, kick out. And then, you know, he pieced it together to create a sequence for, I think it was a checkout or something like that in Transworld.
Okay.
Yeah.
Holy shit, man. That's the worst feeling. You're like, how do I explain this to this dude? Hey, can you try that again?
Like, dude.
Wow. Do you remember what your first video that you watched that maybe you watched on repeat, like the single part that you rewound and watched like every day to get you hyped? Was there something like that in your life?
Oh yeah. I rewatch Fulfill the Dream every day. I would watch, I would watch Baker GG every day. I would, I would watch, and then Day One versus Ronnie Mullen, round two, every day.
Whose part in Sorry was your favorite?
Bastion's all day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
We were Apple Yard.
Apple Yard too.
When Apple Yard, I probably said this before, but when Apple Yard came out with the Every Me and Every You song, like,
yeah,
we went and saw that fucking band because it was so in our head from watching Apple Yard all the time.
Was it Placebo, right?
Placebo. Right? So it was like, we're like, they're coming. Let's just go see them.
Dude, I would watch that part every day because of that song too. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, dude. Those videos were fucking heavy, dude.
I loved it, dude. Yeah.
Arto, Rally, everything.
Everything.
So I was wanting to talk to you about, because I heard you were skating with the Skate Mafia Bros early on, like Surrey and when Kramer maybe and those dudes.
Yeah. So during the Powell days, me and DeVille and the team we'd take a drive to San Diego like every weekend, and we'd meet up with them, and they had all the spots. So we'd meet up with Kramer and Tyler Surrey and I forgot the skate shop that was called out there. But
Pacific Filmer, Drive?
There was another one. Dude, what's it called? It's what they all used to skate for. I forgot the name of it, though.
Oh, okay.
But there was a Filmer there that he would get everybody in the van and take us to these super cool spots. But
that's Dan, right? Dan Connolly?
This guy named Creepy Kyle.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's a little foot toucher, man. He's a creepy dude, but I don't know if you heard of him.
No, but we had our own creepy Kyle. Kyle Camarillo.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, but did he touch feet?
I don't think so, but he was good. I don't know how he got creepy, but foot toucher.
This dude would touch feet. I don't know if you heard the stories, but yeah, he had a foot fetish for like skater kids.
Oh, damn.
And he would be super gnarly, man. And I don't know if you heard the story, but yeah, it's a pretty intense story.
Like, it's not even a joke, huh?
It's not a joke. Yeah, it's like rough. It's like,
oh damn.
Like, he would wait till they would like sleep and do weird things and to their feet. Oh, yeah.
Whoa.
Take off their shoe. Yeah. All the Skate Mafia dudes, man, like, yeah, they had to send him home during a Tampa Am contest because it was so bad that they ended up getting together and was like, look, bro, you're creepy, bro. You got to go home. Like, this is not the business, dude. And
what the fuck is that?
Jesus Christ.
But he filmed like their whole career when they were all hams. Like, all that footage that you see early on.
Uh-huh.
That was Creepy Kyle.
Okay. Was Marius with him and stuff?
Marius, Julian Davidson. There's a lot of dudes.
Those are such dear homies. I love Surrey and Wes and like, I don't know if you knew Shockus, but when he was down there, he kind of introduced me to all those San Diego guys. And like, I've gone on a few trips with them and they're just so sick. Like the first time we went on a trip, the second day I was like, these are like my best friends. Like, these guys are so cool. And like, they don't complain. They rip. They're funny. Like, I love those dudes.
Oh yeah, for sure, man. Like, you know, Kellen and, Peter Smolik, all those guys, dude. Like, I met them, when I was a little kid, and I was like, "Damn, these guys are cool, man." Just free spirited and just no worries.
Right. What is kind of like the thing that gets you? Like, are you ever really sponsored until Blind? Are you kind of on flow on those other things? Like, I think it was Pal and Baker and Pop War. Chocolate. You were on Chocolate, or you were on Flow.
I was on Flow for Chocolate for 4 years. So literally till Blind, I was Flow. I was Flow for Mystery. I was Flow for Powell. I was Flow for Chocolate. I was Flow for, a bunch of these other companies, man. And Ice Cream, I was on Ice Cream for a second, the shoe company.
Yeah.
I was Flow for that. It took me a minute to really get on some companies, you know.
Were you discouraged or stoked? Like, were you like, oh, it's cool to be on Flow, and then after a while, like, no, I need more than this? Or were you just skating stoked, or like, what was your vibe?
Man, I was bummed. I was like, dude, I don't know if this is for me. I was filming crazy, man. I would send Sam Smythe like the most gnarliest footage every week. Like, I would go to Wilshire 15 and like, I nollie-heeled it. back in the day, and I would just do all these like hammers, you know, and send him to Smite every week, like boom, look, like I'm trying to get on, and like Beeble was trying to vouch for me at the time, and yeah, I don't know what happened, you know. So I use all that footage that I gave Sam Smythe for a digital video part that helped me to get on Crew and Super later on. But
Super, you've been mixed with a lot of legends,
dude. So many, crazy.
Yeah, Super must have been insane. Did you go on some trips with them?
Yeah, I went on the majority of trips with them, and
like,
that was
like the entire like the All Star like Muska Penny.
Yeah.
Oh man, like, bro, were you guys getting treated like the Beatles when you'd show up and stuff?
Everywhere we went to, man, it was crazy. We were rock stars on that team.
Yeah, wow,
dude. Penny would come to my room, and you know he likes to freestyle and stuff like that. And I was making beats at the time, and he would come to my room every night. It was me and Furby, and he would come in and just freestyle for hours over my beats, and I would record them. And I have like a song with Penny, like over one of my beats. I was like, this is so sick, man.
No way.
Yeah, dude.
Wow. Yeah.
Every night he would come in my room and just freestyle. He would stay there for like hours, dude. Yeah, me and Furs were just like, dude, this is the best thing ever. He's like our favorite skater.
So you would mostly room with Furby?
Yeah, Furby or Nick Tucker. Yeah, usually those two.
Okay. What is the origin story of the Nollie 360? When did you like learn it? How did you learn it? Like, it's kind of a unique trip. Not a lot of people have it, especially not the way you have it. Like, what do you remember? Like, oh, like, did you do Caballeros first and then think, like, how did it come?
Dude, I was doing Nollie back when 80s first.
Huh.
And Evan Hernandez was my favorite skater. So I'd watch everything that he did.
Mm.
And he would do them at El Dorado on the pyramid. And then I saw a sequence of him, I think it was in Transworld, off this red stair, Garden Grove, 8th stair in Orange County. And he nollied 360'd it. And I was like, what? Like, just like looking at it, I'm like, damn, that's the trick no one does. And it just kind of felt right. I would imitate him like so much when I was growing up. So that was one of the ones I was like, I gotta learn that, you know? And I want to show him. But yeah, I just took it and just, and just ran with it and
there was
perfected
no,
it. Yeah.
There was nothing on Yahoo to print out though for that one.
No, it was just a sequence of Evan and I would just look at it the same way I looked at
it. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like foot placement, body weight, like totally break everything down.
Break everything down. Yeah.
Right.
And that's one of those tricks that just worked for me because I like to do backside tricks. So I just, you know, nollie back when 80s and I was like, okay. Just a little bit more turn, and I just kept at it for years until I, you know, got it down. But he's really the one that I learned it from.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dude, sick. And then, so I was confused on the timeline here, but I know like that you had like a pretty solid part in that Atmosphere. What was it? Barry video, right?
Barry video. Yeah.
Is that before or after the Wallenberg contest?
That was before.
Okay. Yeah. So that may have helped you get to blind, but I feel like I never seen you, but I mean, I live in NorCal, but I definitely seen you at Wallenberg. And then I think you got on blind pretty shortly after that. Yeah.
So that was before Chocolate. That was during Chocolate. Sorry, my bad. That was during Chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
But that part had came out and that made a lot of noise down here, Southern Cali and a couple other places. And the Wallenberg contest had come up a little bit after that. So I think it was like, 2009? I think it was, or 10, 9? Wallenberg? 8 or something like that.
Yeah, maybe 8.
Yeah. So Barry video was around that same time, maybe a year before.
Okay.
So I get there and I'm just like, I thought, you know, everyone knew that video, just a little kid being naive, but no one knew. So I was just like, oh, snap, I got to go and prove these guys that I can skate. And yeah, Wallenberg, that was a crazy contest.
Yeah. What made you think like to go to Wallenberg? Had you been there before?
I've never been there. I think, what was that? Dude, it's been so long, but, we were on a trip. I think Jordan Hoffert and DeVille wanted to go there. But yeah, one thing led to another, and we get there, and it was just like this massive contest that I had no idea that was going to be that insane. I was so nervous to go skate that spot because I saw Chris Cole up there, and I seen like all these heavy A-listers up there, and I was like, jeez.
Yeah, that was, I think it was 2009, actually. And that was the one where Chris Cole back threed it and then hit his head, and then next time he made it?
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Okay.
I was on S at the time. I forgot about that. I forgot to even say that. I was on S.
Oh, dude. Okay. With Scuba?
Yeah. With Scuba, yeah.
Sick.
I was about to get on the actual team, too. So I was about to be AM for S. This was after Ice Cream. And they made a shoe for me, like a whole Romar insole and like a colorway for me.
Yeah.
And right as I was about to get on S, Supra was coming out and they were going back and forth trying to get me on the team. This was like after Wallenberg, but yeah, they wanted me on the team both ways. And then I had a meeting with Don Brown and Scuba and everybody, and they were going back and forth. And then next thing you know, Scuba had hit me up next week and was like, hey man, you should take the Supra deal because we're going out of business. And I was like, what? So it kind of messed up my whole deal with Supra, but yeah.
I remember that. That was crazy because I was friends with Mike Anderson, and I think they were just about to give him a shoe too. And they were in Santa Cruz on like some demos, like traveling, and the news just broke like while they were there. And I was talking to him and Scuba and a couple of the other guys, and they were just like, dude, what am I going to do? Like, this was like important for me, you know, like it was substantial money that they were like, you know, helping their lives out with. So I remember when that all went down. But yeah, let's talk about Wallenberg, because what was the biggest thing that you had ever thrown down before going there?
I went to Carlsbad Gap like 2 weeks before Wallenberg, and I had an Ollie 360 there.
Oh,
and I did that same day, and I was just like so like ready to go, and that Wallenberg contest was just right around the corner. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, let's go. I want to do it down that.
Yeah,
and yeah, that was my preparation pretty much, because Carlsbad is like, this is like a distance type of gap, you know, it's like far. So right. Wallenberg is like kind of similar, a little taller.
Yep.
So I was like prepared. I was like ready to go for that.
But the difference is you got like, fuck, I don't know, 300 or 400 people in attendance, and then a fucking gnarly shooter ramp that like,
yeah.
So you're dealing with all that. And then if you had to do it all over again, if you went back in time, would you still wear the Dodger hat?
Whoa, slow it down.
Heck yeah, man. Nah, yeah, for sure. I had no idea that. I forgot like NorCal hates LA.
You've seen the movie Colors, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't have to tell you, I go to LA and I don't wear a Giants hat because I've gotten hit in the head before just by dudes walking down the street and stuff. I'm like, damn, they take this shit serious.
Seriously, yeah.
But talk about that. Like, yeah, you didn't know Jake at all, right?
I had no idea who anybody was, you know, up there. That was my first time meeting so many people. New faces and Thrasher and all these guys. And yeah, I had no idea Phelps, you know, rest in peace, he didn't like the LA Dodger hat that bad. And I was just like, oh man, I gotta work even 10 times harder now, you know, to prove this guy like I can skate. And just going through the emotions through that whole contest was just like, dude, that was a tricky one, man. I was low key scared. I was like,
well, yeah, you're in a different territory. And like I said, like when you look at the footage and you see the wall of people, it's gnarly. Like, and when people would skate, the crowd would get closer. So the runway, like you see Lizard King doing like a firecracker or a fucking airwalk or something. It is just like, when you're like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And dude, having an old man on the mic screaming at you and telling you to take the Dodger hat off. But to Jake's defense, he's not here to defend himself, so I have to do it. But I would say one of the things was, and Chris Cole talks about this, is there was so many random people trying to get some, and the people that were there, like Chris Cole, everyone knew Chris Cole was there and he was going to try the back 360, and we need to see some shit go down, because we only got this for like, I think it's 45 minutes to an hour, and then they had to leave. Like, there was a permit for the spot. And so there's all these random kids up on the thing, so much that people could barely get up there to like take their chance. So I think Jake, obviously he had never seen you before and he doesn't know what you're trying. And then he sees a Dodger hat, and it doesn't take much to get Jake to fucking just, you know what I'm saying? But that, what happened to anyone that doesn't know is like, you were trying the Nollie back 360 and you were getting closer, but you're dealing with all the elements and Jake yelling at you basically. Right.
Yep, for sure.
And maybe even like kind of like explain what happened, because I was filming it. I got the footage.
Yeah, you were the first one I talked to from that whole thing, from like the interview standpoint. But I like literally tried to vario flip it first. You know, that was my intention, was just like, let me try to fling out a vario flip. And as soon as I fling one out, Phelps was like, get this random dude out of here, the Dodger cap, get him out of here. Yeah. And literally he would stand like in the middle of the four block, like the Wallenberg four, and just like, while I'm trying a trick, like stand there, you know, like trying to make me get hurt, you know? And I was like, dang, this is like no joke. You know, like, I've never seen anything like this before in my life, where someone's trying to physically make, get me hurt, you know?
Yeah.
So I was just, you know, I was just trying to like be the bigger dude and just walk around him, you know, like, cause you know, I don't want to cause like a fight in front of everybody, which I'm not that dude anyway, but like, right. He was getting so close though that I was like, bro, I might have to, you know, might have to come out.
But you had so much determination, like you weren't, like some people would have just walked away and said, I can't deal with this, but you're like, no, I gotta do this.
Yeah, exactly. Just from, you know, from what I was telling you before, being flow and just like, I'm just trying to make something of myself, you know, like trying my hardest and nothing was happening. So that contest was just kind of like the deal breaker. Mm. And so I was like, you know what, let me be the bigger dude. Let me just keep trying to do some tricks. And I had to switch my game plan up because vario flip wasn't cracking at the time. So I had to impress Phelps, you know, pretty much. He was like the guy. So I was like, I have to impress this guy without wanting to do that. But, you know, and then, I tried Nollie 360 and I flung one out, stuck it. And I got everyone's attention. Everyone was like, whoa, who is this kid? You know, like, what? Yeah. And as soon as I stuck like one, Phelps started to move back a little bit. And he was still hating a little bit, but you could tell that he wanted me to like,
he wanted to see that one.
He wanted to see that. And then I think the crowd wanted to see it too. So, you know, I kept trying it. And, you know, I broke my board. And there's one time where I broke my board and he takes my trucks and my setup and throws it into the crowd. Chucks it into the crowd, and I laugh it off, you know, but I'm like, dude, what? This man's crazy. And then I borrowed somebody's board and I kept trying it, but I didn't land it. But you know, I think the sticks kind of like opened the doors for me in the world of skateboarding, you know. Just sometimes the not landing it is better than, you know, doing it sometimes in that sense, you know, like the way that the atmosphere was, it kind of opened up a lot more opportunities, you know.
Plus your attitude, I think, like your perseverance and your determination, that shows a lot of your character. And so somebody's going to look at you and be like, oh, this guy ain't, you know, he ain't turning around. He wants to land it and he wants to do this. So like, I don't know, like,
yeah.
I could see like, who was it? Weiss or somebody that probably like was there and was like, we got to get this guy.
Yeah, Weiss was there for sure.
Yeah.
And I had, I was trying to get off chocolate and I talked to Jared Lucas, the Bones team manager. And I said, hey man, I like blind man. Like, is there any way you can give my footage tape to the Weiss? Sent the footage tape to him. And like that day, Weiss got back to him literally that night. It was like, let's put him on. Let's put him on right now. Like, let's go.
How hyped are you? Is that a fucking sick moment?
I was super, super hyped, man. I was like, dude, finally. You know what I mean? Like, dang, man, I had to go through so many things to finally get to an AM spot on blind, you know? And that was, you know, that was a mission in itself. But that helped a lot, though, you know? Like, it really, I had to figure out, like, what the skate world was, like, how it worked and the industry and all these little things and big things. And yeah, Wallenberg was definitely that epitome of all that, you know, all the industry guys were there, like literally there.
Yeah. I mean, is that the only Buster Bale you've ever skated in?
Yeah, that's the only one.
You didn't go to there was one in San Diego, I think, at that Jeremy Ray at the convention center.
Oh, no, I didn't go to that. I think that one was enough for me, dude.
Okay, yeah, I was wondering if, like, you wanted redemption or you're like, nah, that's cool.
Yeah, that one and done, dude. I was over.
And did you came back to Wallenberg, though, right? Did you do something down it eventually?
So I went back there with TJ. He switched Big Spin it, dude, in like three tries. And I tried to nollie 360 it again, but I just was over it. I just didn't feel right. I wasn't prepared. So
wait, was that with DeCenzo too?
No, it was a blind trip that we took to NorCal.
Okay.
Huh. And yeah, he went there specifically to switch Big Spin it.
Wow. Okay.
And yeah, he did it in four tries or three tries or something.
Damn.
It's so good.
So what's like your first trip with blind, or like first, like I'm a part of this crew and like getting to know who you're going to mesh with and who's like maybe not your dude, but you still got to tolerate and all that shit.
So we had a downtown showdown contest, the Vans one.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was my first introduction to the whole team. It was like Craiger, James Craig, and Morgan Smith and Sheppy wasn't there yet. But, those three guys where I was like, that's blind to me, you know? And we did this whole contest and I got to mesh with Craiger, and that was like, I knew him a little bit, but I didn't know him like fully.
Mm.
And yeah, meshing with James Craig was like, that was my favorite section in the round two blind video, Ronnie Mullenberg's day one song video.
Mm.
And yeah, just kicking it with those guys. I was like, yeah, dude, this feels good. You know, finally, like I feel like part of a team.
Right.
Yeah, and then I think we did pretty good at that contest, like first or second. Second, I think, but yeah.
Which one was that? What were the obstacles? Because I went to, I think, it wasn't the one where Omar cracked his head open, right?
Dude, it might have been that one. It had like this, the huge 11 stair, like red 11.
I was at the one. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was the first time I think I seen, who was it? Nick Merlino, first time I seen. He was doing everything down the fucking big ledge or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, uh-huh. That huge stair set. Oh, but yeah, okay. That was my first time meeting Nick Merlino too. And I was like, damn, this guy's crazy. Jeez.
Yeah, that was fucking, those things were cool. Like in the whole Hollywood studio shit, like, cause I'm from up here. So that stuff's really foreign to me. Yeah. So I'm like, dude, I kind of want to just go check out this stuff like a tourist. Like, but there's sick skating happening, like super much. How do you feel about contests? Like, there's all different types, obviously. You got your Tampas and then you have your Buster Bale, and then you have like these ones like the Showdown, which are like obstacle built and stuff. Like I think there's three or something where they had like three different obstacles and each team would like figure it out. But do you thrive in those, or do you get more nervous? Like, are you, I just want to go out and film. Like how would you describe yourself?
Dude, early on, I kind of like those type of contests, the ones where you just don't have to be like one run and like, it's just everyone's watching you. It's kind of like a team thing.
Mm.
I kind of like those ones. Like, that's where I was like, yeah, I'm down for the showdowns. I was down for, you know, Tampa. I was down for the Tampa Ams too, but yeah, mostly like the team okay. ones for sure. Yeah.
Less spotlight, like a little less like, it seems to me like, and I'm not trying to talk too much shit, but Street League to me is just so boring. And like, I just can't, I don't like the Street League. And I feel like that's kind of what went to the Olympics, where it's like everyone just tries one gnarly trick on this thing and there's so much bailing. It's like, to people outside of skateboarding, they're watching that, they're like, does anyone ever land anything? You know, it's just like, I like more of the flow where you're like skating through and you're showing like, I did a kickflip, now I'm doing a varial heel, like, and you keep showing that you can skate.
Yeah, for sure.
But I mean, Nyjah and those dudes are gnarly. They fucking so kill gnarly. It on the obstacles. But it's like, I don't know, just as far as like, there's probably a better medium. But for me, I mean, I'm a fan of the Buster Bale format because it's so sick to go to a spot that's legendary and see all this new shit. Like, because in skateboarding, everyone knows about the ABD. And so you have to step up to something new. And to me, that adds this extra pressure and excitement that when somebody does something, it's like forever and it's in the history books almost, like it's kind of legendary.
Oh yeah, for sure. Especially at the spots that you guys like wanted to get them to. Those are like legendary Clipper. Spots, dude. Clipper, man.
Like Shane O'Neill at Clipper, you're just like, that's forever.
yeah, literally.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like that anymore, man. Like I kind of miss those vibes of that era, you know, of just like the Buster Bell and just these legendary spots, you know, that kind of made skateboarding for what it is.
Well, you talked a little bit about kind of filming a lot, even in your flow days, sending Sam a bunch of stuff and all that kind of stuff. So that's like, obviously you're comfortable filming, and then you get on Blind for real. And this is basically your first like part, right? Where you're like, you've had some parts with some other stuff, but when the Blind, what was that video called?
This Is Not a Test.
Yeah. This Is Not a Test. Wasn't that kind of like, I mean, that must have been, was there a premiere for it?
Yeah, there was a premiere for it at Soltech.
So is that kind of like, I mean, looking back, is that like a huge thing for you?
Yeah, that's the part that really made my whole career. Really, like I went with a Goku on that part, dude. I literally put all what I had into it. And, you know, I made sure that part was a standout part. And, you know, Weez gave me the last part in that video. So I was able to, like, you know, pick this song, Craig Mack, Flavor in Your Ear.
Dude, such a good song for that part, man. So you picked that song?
So it was supposed to go to Morgan. And I was in the editing room. I like to be in all the editing spots, like editing my footage and stuff with the editor. Mm. And, yeah, they wanted to use a different song for me because they had to get the rights for these songs. So they're only able to get a few. And I was like, hey, like, I like Flavor in Your Ear. Like, is there any way like we could trade? You know, will Morgan be cool with that? And I think Weez was like, yeah, I think he'll be stoked. You know, we'll figure it out. So we just swapped. And, you know, I hope Morgan's cool with it. I never asked him about it, but
yeah. Like, did he know he was going to have that song at one point and then realized he wasn't going to have it?
I think he picked that song first.
It's a good song, especially for like the situation for you, like kind of like on the rise, like, and you're like about to go pro and then you have the last part. Like, it's sick.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Yeah, I was like, I have to use this song, man. Like, I have to. It fits so perfectly. And while we're editing it, we were just like, dang, this is gonna be really, really sick when it comes out. And then we had the premiere at Soltech, and that was like my debut for it. Was supposed to be S, Blind, and all these things supposed to happen, but it ended up being Super. But yeah, during that this is not a test part, like, bro, we went on super missions, man, to, you know, Santa Monica triple set and
you
know, all these different rail. Like, I was like trying to show my rail game too. And yeah, it was super, super dope. I love that part.
How much more footage did you have to film after the triple set? Was it the last thing you got, or was it early on? And then you did you get that ender like early, or was that the last thing you filmed for that part?
The Nollie Back Heel was definitely the last trick. That Nollie Back Heel and Nollie Heel Front Crook down this 7 rail in San Bernardino, like, those are the last two. Uh-huh. But I was like, I have to get the Nollie Back Heel, and that was my last time going there. I was on my last, like, I can't do this anymore, I'm super sore, like, they're just gonna have to call it, figure out a different ender. And I rolling down that little ramp to the triple set, dude, last attempt, I was literally, this is my last one. It was like a crowd, I felt like Wallenberg, dude, like the crowd of people everywhere. You know, there's like a bar right there, there's like everybody at the beach, and like that last one, I kicked it, like Nollie Back Heel, landed it, rolled away, and everyone was like, yeah, and bro, like, I was like, my part's done, it's over, like,
that's celebratory. Yeah. is that the same day that guy is yelling at you in the intro like you're gonna break your fucking neck?
That was the first time we went there.
Okay.
Yeah, and that dude with the dog was just yapping away. And we just had to step in, bro, and just... Yeah, thank God for Weez, man. He was... Yeah, he's like the protector.
has Weiss ever just got naked like to like divert attention? Like, I know he likes to do the naked 540. So has he ever just like,
I've never seen him do that. Like get naked and skate. I've never seen it. Like not once. So I'm like, thank God.
That used to be like, he would just show up and you're like, it's coming.
He's a wild dude.
I love that dude, man. The digital days. Woo.
Yeah. So yeah, Dennis Martin and Weiss were the ones that I got my first digital part with in what's it called? Smoke and Mirrors.
Uh-huh.
So that was before the blind video.
And they would always use sick music. I remember that for sure. Like, because I think working at Thrasher, I think because we were who we were, we had to like have music rights earlier than some of the other people, or the other people had budget that we didn't have for the music. But I would always get jealous. I'd be like, dude, they're using fucking a song I listen to. Like,
yeah.
We got to use like just this folder of stuff that people, you know, and I would be like, damn. But it's always, I mean, as a videographer, everyone knows that music is a big part of like that fucking, you know, it helps the part so much. So
it can make or break your part for sure.
Yeah. Just ask Trapasso. We always said Trapasso went career suicide with that IE crazy. Like
he stepped into Sinner's World in that video part. Huh?
I love those dudes.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What was do you remember the first time you met Shane Hale? Like you've been on Shake Jump for a minute, right?
Yeah, since 2013.
Uh-huh.
Like that. Yeah.
Like how did that all go down?
How did that go down?
Like maybe through Terry Kennedy.
Through crew. Uh-huh. We went on this Canadian tour called Smash and Grab. And it was it was all the Shake Junk crew. It was a lot of the Baker squad and you know. And I met Shane and met like Herb Dog and all these other guys and we just meshed really well. And that's where, you know, we just became bros like instantly from that trip.
Those guys are hard not to mesh with. I fucking like Spanky, Herm, Figgy, all those dudes, Reynolds. They're all just like the prototypical dude, like rad skater and rad in the van. And just not like, I don't know. It's easy.
Yeah, for sure. And I've known Beagle for a minute, like for even before, like during the Little Cypress, California, like days, man, like super, super young. I used to see him eating at Wendy's like by himself all the time in my neighborhood. And I'm like I know this guy. I've seen him in like videos, you know. And I guess he used to work like right around where we used to skate. I just to see him over and over again. And he used to skate Murdy Park in Huntington Beach, so that was pretty close to where we live. And I ended up going on trips with him. And I was like, "What, dude? This is a crazy small world, man."
Yeah, holy shit! No, Beagle's the best. I just actually had him on like. Recently, like we caught up. What was it like going pro? Did they have a big party? Were you surprised? Or was it like one of those things that like it was planned out and it was like coming and you knew, like, were you involved with the graphics and stuff or did they surprise you with it?
Yeah, they surprised me with it. So I was supposed to go pro right after This Is Not a Test part.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, Super was still a new company and they had, you know, they had to like work me in there and they wanted to do some cool stuff to even it out. So I had to wait till another part came out called Damn to turn pro.
Oh yeah.
But once I turned pro, I had no idea. So Dennis Martin, the team manager for Crew and Supra was like, "Hey Romar, like we want to go, like let's go out to eat." This fool never invites me to go out to eat. So like, okay, like let's go. He's like, "What's your favorite spot?" I was like, "I don't know." Like, I don't know. I just told him some random spot and we went there and it was like close to Long Beach. And I was like, okay, like he never comes out here. Like really. And he's like, Spencer Hamilton and his wife was out. Dennis Martin's wife was out there too. So we're eating and they're just all smiling and shit. I'm like, what the fuck? And so, they're like, let's go to the Red Room after this, you want to go get some drinks? I'm like, dude, what? I was like, let's go. So like I hop in this car, we drive over to the Red Room.
So you could sense something was up.
Something was up. I was like, all right, something's going on. I kind of felt like it was like that time, but I just had no idea, like in a different way. Right. But I see all like my homies outside, like my bros. And once I get there, they all scatter into the bar. And I'm like, okay, like that's weird. Like afraid of me or something. I don't know. So I get out and like I'm walking in with Dennis and everybody. And as soon as I open up the door, it was just like a roar of like, you're a pro. And everyone had these, they made these banners for me. Like Crew and Super made these cool ass, like you're pro banner. And like, I was like a bucket of chicken, like a KFC bucket of chicken. And my face is like on the front of it. And it had like all these, they had like five boards of like my name on it ready to go. And I was just like, then I get inside, Musk is DJing.
Oh shit.
Yeah, dude, I'm like, what? I see Stevie Williams over here. I'm like, Sheffy's over here. I'm like, man, this is all the like big dogs are up in there, man. I was like, dang, this is crazy.
Nice. They did it right.
Yeah. Sick, that was something I can never forget about that, man. That was crazy.
What was the graphic? Did they have your board there too? Like, here it is, or did that come out later?
Yeah, so they had, you know, like the OG Blind logo. Like the writing, they added in like Romar writing, like the OG
font.
Yeah. And then it had like my face on it with like different colors. And then they had like a chicken board, like a this one back here. But yeah, it's like, it's super rad, man. Like they had like a bunch of dope graphics, like ready to go.
That rules. Fuck yeah. Yeah. What has happened since then that's kind of been like the pinnacle of like being a pro? Like how did that make you feel? Like I can relax now, or did that put a fire under your ass that like, fuck, I have to turn it up even another level now? Like, you had filmed some like parts that people were stoked on. I always tell Pat Duffy his biggest problem was his first video part was too gnarly and raised the bar too high. Like, did you feel like this weird pressure of like, how am I going to one up what I already put a lot of time and effort into? Or were you like, this is what I've been wanting and now it's time to get it really good?
Dude, I mean, you know, obviously it gets harder every time you drop a video part, and I already dropped like so many before that, you know, like of like the best stuff that I could do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it definitely was like turn up the notch a little bit more, but you know, I had to deal with like going on tours now, you know, and like giving footage to Supra, giving footage to Blind, giving footage to all these other venture and all these other companies.
Right.
And you know, that became so difficult, you know, and everyone expected some high level skating.
Uh-huh.
And I was getting beat up, man. Like, you know, going on the Supra tours and then like coming back home and going straight to a Blind tour and then going, you know, I wasn't ready. I mean, I was ready for that, but I was like, dude, this is tough, man. And, you know, I had to learn the ropes from that. But yeah, definitely turning pro was like that was like the beginning. Even though a lot of people were following my career before that, that was like, you got to shoot stuff for the mags, you know, and all these other things. So,
right.
It was, yeah.
Did you ever get a cover for any of the mags?
Yeah, I got a cover for Skateboarder.
Oh, sick.
Yeah, Nolly Hill down this grass gap. It was the ender for my damn video part.
Who shot that?
Retta.
Oh, sick.
Yeah. Yeah. So nice. That was my first cover. That's my only cover, but I'm stoked to even have a cover. So
what was some stuff that you kind of like as a kid were all like fanned out about, but like as a veteran, you're like, this is what I would teach my kids about being a pro skater and having a skateboard career?
I think it's all about pretty much pacing yourself, you know. You don't want to do too much too quick. That's why I try to tell a lot of other skaters, is like you were talking about Pat Duffy, like you don't want to go too hard your first video part. Like you do want to go hard, but you don't want to like give it all away, you know, because you got more things to build up from that. And so you want to be able to, you know have the stamina and the pace to keep going and build from that. I even told Chris Johnson, you know, like he was a kid that he was watching me because we all grew up in the same area.
Oh,
I was like, you don't want to trade for Del Toro right now. You want to wait a little bit, you know, do it down Davis Gap, but then like then reach, you know, wait your way up. And then so that you have the longevity, you want to have longevity in this game because that's the key. And most, you know, athletic sports and even skateboarding. So
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword. Like for me, I look at it as like, if I'm a young kid, I'm trying everything I can do to get to where I want to get, right? So yeah. I'm putting everything in that because I need that. And then you get to that, and then then everyone knows who you are, so they're expecting it, but you already just spent your fucking everything. And then also, like somebody like Joslyn, you know, Corey Duffel is another example. Like, how many times can you do this shit without your body breaking down? So, like, in your prime, you kind of have to get what you can, because at some point you're going to skate stairs less, you're going to like do bigger stuff less, and you know, you're all of a sudden your front side air guy, you know, like whatever.
Yeah. It is a double-edged sword, man. It really is. Cause it's just like, you have to prove yourself over and over again. Mm-hmm. It's like, you have to, be better than your last part. Mm. And yeah, it's tricky. It's a tricky thing.
Okay. So in all of this going on, have you been dabbling at any point in, I mean, obviously music was important to you, but like, what part do you really kind of like start like figuring out being a DJ?
Dude, literally, like, this is not a test. I was dabbling into DJing, like, already there. So I was already into, like, into music.
Fully, with records or digital?
Digital, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was just dabbling into that, and, you know, and I was making beats. So when I go on super tours, I was literally on the train while we were going to different, like, locations. And I would just pull out my little beat pad and start making beats on the train, and I was already dabbling into that. And, you know, super, like, they let me like produce music for their tour videos.
Uh-huh.
So I was able to like put some music into there.
Yeah.
So that was like, all right, cool. Like, well, let me just do this. And, you know, I just kept doing that. And thank God, cause like skateboarding career is pretty short lived span. Mm-hmm. A lifespan of that is pretty short. So, you know, I was able to kind of do DJ gigs sometimes while I'm not touring. And then while I'm touring, you know, focus on that and come back home and do a little bit of DJing there. And then learning how to really DJ and learning the mechanics behind all of it. And now I'm able to like do any type of gig, man. Like, I've done so many things where I'm like, all right, I understand this completely. It's just like skating, you know, in a sense. Right. Yeah.
What is there anything in DJing that's kind of like skateboarding where like, don't do this? Like, is there shit that's frowned upon that like, oh dude, you kooked it or anything like that? Or is it like, what's the difference about like DJing versus skating as far as like having style and just all the different things? Like, I could understand like maybe throwing on the wrong song at the wrong time and the whole place going yeah. quiet or something.
Yeah. Definitely the wrong song will get you looked at, frowned upon. But I mean, there's a lot of things I've had to learn through DJing,
yeah.
like going on tour with Hobson and stuff like that, learning how to, you know, be a, you know, MC, how to really work a crowd. I had no experience of that. So I've failed so many times on tour, you know, like playing the wrong song where he's like, he looks at me and like wants me to play Ill Mind song, and it's like a different song that I put on, and I get yelled at after that. Like, there's these things that like you have to learn without like someone teaching you, you know. You have to go through like, just like, you know, jumping down some stairs, you gotta fail until you finally, you know, land that perfect one.
Yeah. But
it's on a bigger scale with music sometimes though, man. Like, you're in front of 10,000 people, you can't fail like that, you know, and you have to really be on top of your game. So I had to learn to really like be really on top of my game with it. On that aspect of DJing.
For sure. What's the biggest thing you've done? Like, have you done 10,000, like big rooms like that?
Yeah. So Hobson, the guy I DJ for, this dude has the most cult following I've ever seen. So we've done tours across the US and across Europe and stuff like that. So we did this festival. I forgot what it's called. It was somewhere in Germany, but it was like 15,000 people. And he was on right before Playboi Carti. And Playboi Carti is like humongous in this world right now. And, you know, it was one of those first ones where I had to be on the mic and get everyone hyped, you know? And that was like a throwing into the lion's den right away. I had to get people ready to go, you know, and that was hard. I was pacing back and forth, like, you know, my anxiety was kicking in. I was like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. I was asking his manager, like, hey, what do I say to, you know, get people hyped? And she was trying to break it down. And then I had to put my own little sauce on it, and I figured out how to do it. But yeah, it was wild, man.
How did you
He does big stuff.
Did you get connected with him? Did he see you skate? Because he skates a little too, right?
Yeah, he skates for sure.
So was it like I want a skater to be my DJ, or like how did it work? How did you get involved?
So you know Black Bar in LA?
Yeah, yeah. Bethany, yeah. Right?
Bethany and Shannon. Yeah. Uh-huh. So they owned the bar in Hollywood when it was still there. And I went there on like a random birthday, and Hobson was there, and my boy Seven Machiavelli was like, hey man, like Hobson wants to meet you. He said he knew that you were coming. He wants to talk to you in the back. I was like, yeah, man, let's do it. Met him. He just rapped out about skateboarding and about like hip hop. And then, dude, one thing led to another. And he called me the next day after we talked. And he was like, hey, my DJ just quit. He DM'd me on Instagram. I was like, hey, my DJ just quit. Is there any way you would want to be my DJ? And I wrote back like, hell yeah. Like, dude, for sure. And his manager called me like right after that. And we just went over the logistics, and she's like, hey, we're going on a tour next week. Would you be available? And I'm like, all right, let's go. I have no experience with this, but let's go. And yeah, man, I think the first show we did, he was a headliner. Ludacris was a headliner, and B.O.B.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I was like thrown in right away. And ever since then, yeah, we've just been bros. And we've been on tours like from 2016, 17 to now, pretty much. So he doesn't tour right. He's not touring right now, but when we did go on tour, like we go everywhere. So
how sick, dude.
Yeah.
I don't know much about him. What would be a song that he would like, what would get the whole place hyped the most? What is there one or two that people like really want to hear?
Most people get introduced to him through this song called Illmind 5. He's kind of talking about just like what hip hop was back then, and like how, you know, it's kind of like saturated. And
man, I hate rap, but if the shoe fits, wear it. I become a freak of nature, all the kids stare. Who walk around bumping raw with the shit blaring, saying fuck school and dropping out like a miscarriage. I'm embarrassed and I'm ashamed I played a part in this devilish game, making your common sense perish. But I ain't taking the full blame, cause most of you chumps running around here ain't never had strict parents. All of your brain cells rotten from weed. You feeling like if you ain't got it, life's not as complete. You having sex with every motherfucking body you see, with a past so dark that Satan to jump out of his seat. But still you out in these streets thinking you hot as can be, without the knowledge to lead. So you just follow the sheet, making sure your lame swag is all polished and clean, while your favorite rapper's like, yeah, he got it from me. You been brainwashed by a fake life that you used to living. When I say the word fun, what do you envision? Probably drinking and smoking out with your crew and chilling with clueless women. You trying to bang bumping New Edition. Is that all you think life really is? Well, if so, then you're a fucking idiot.
He's got the crazy eyes, right?
Yeah, yeah, he's got the contacts.
Okay, yeah,
like contacts with the white contact.
Yeah, like yeah. Damn. Oh, that's sick, dude. So that's been hella fun, huh?
Yeah, it's been super fun to meet some crazy people in that world and all those different artists in that world. So
does it pay all right?
Yeah, for sure. Touring wise, yeah.
Touring's the way to do it.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Have you ever DJed? I love going to stand up comedy shows. Have you ever done those where they have the DJ open up to get the crowd hyped for the stand-up comedy?
Yeah, I've done a couple of those. Not for stand-up, but I've done opening stuff for certain gigs, like for certain artists and people and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you're kind of, are you kind of like freelance as well? Like open, like I'll do a wedding if someone wants or whatever?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah, I do all that. But my goal is to just become like the artist now. So it's like, you know, like Hobson is, you know, his own entity. I would like to try to do that too. So I expand into that world, you know. And
like you're gonna rap as well, or
no, just be the DJ. But like you know how like, you know, you go to festivals sometimes or like some of these shows, it's like the DJ is the producer, but he's also the artist.
Uh-huh.
And you're going to go watch that DJ because you're a fan of his music. Mm-hmm. So kind of similar.
Who are three legends? Like, if you had to put DJs up on your wall, who are some of the guys that you would think are like, this guy needs a statue, you know, or those kind of guys?
Like DJ A-Track, DJ Premier.
And, oh, Premier, yeah.
Premier, yeah, for sure. And dude, there's so many of them.
Uh-huh.
But those top two for sure. Yeah. Okay. I like their style.
We got to talk about the injury. You had a pretty gnarly. Oh, before we talk about that injury, I did hear, true or false, you broke your jaw in a miniature golf scenario.
I knew it was coming. Yeah, man, I broke my jaw playing miniature golf. And wow. That, I don't know, have you ever heard the story?
No, I just heard that you, I was like, wait, did he, you like throw your club and well, how did it happen? I don't know.
that's how everyone thinks it happened. Uh-huh. It was totally, totally left field.
No, you're playing miniature golf and one of the obstacles is a windmill and the thing came around and nailed you in the chin.
Close.
Really?
No.
Okay.
No, we were playing miniature golf in Florida, and that was on a Moda trip, Moda clothing.
Mm.
And we were supposed to go to Europe the next day, and we were playing like for money. We're betting the whole team, and I had won the first round, and they didn't want to pay up the team, so they're like, I'm the young buck on the team, so they're like, let's keep it going, let's play round two. And if you win, we'll pay up. I ended up making the hole in one at the last one, and I ended up winning. And I was like, pay up, guys, you know? And it started raining during this time at the last putt. And so as I putt and I make the putt, I get super excited. Like, I won. I get all this money, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, like, when you return the putt, like the golf club to the front of miniature golf, it was uh-huh. random.
Yeah.
It's pouring raining. And I'm like super hyped and I'm like, have my little golf club. And there's like this five stair. And I'm like just so happy, bro. And I like jump down this five stair. And it's like I said, it was raining. There's a puddle at the bottom. And I'm like returning my golf club. And I jump to do a 180 off the five stair just to look at him and like, you know, like point at him like, ha ha, I won. And as soon as I land on the five stair, the puddle, I slip out, land on my face. Oh. Boom, land on my jaw and my chin, bust my teeth, went through my lip. I broke my it's like a TMJ right here, my chin, from jumping off that five stair pretty much.
Fuck.
In the rain.
Were you hammered? Were you drinking?
No, I was completely sober.
Oh, no.
Yeah, dude.
Did you know, like, instantly, like, this, like, get me to the hospital, this serious?
My vision turned blurry. I was I laid out. I was just there and I was just bleeding. There was like, I was laying in a puddle of blood and like my homie Jacob Walder and Scott Kane, they came down and they were like, I was like, dude, I'm ready to go to Europe. I think I said that to him. Like, I'm ready to go. They're like, no, bro, stay down.
Let's go to Europe.
I was just so out of it, you know, I was like, uh-huh. so hyped. And Whoa. that was going to be my first time to Europe.
Oh, and you were planning on going already?
Yeah, we already had our bags packed, and that was like our layover to go okay. to Europe. Yeah,
I thought you were so out of it. You're like, let's go to Europe.
Yeah, oh, we're damn. Supposed to go to Europe, and then yeah. So I broke my jaw, chin, playing miniature golf, but like returning my golf club.
Fuck.
Out of all things, bro. And yeah, I stayed in the hospital for a week. They had to wire my mouth shut. I had that, to, you know,
you can't, you gotta like just shakes or something, like only drink, you can't eat, right? Because your jaw's broken.
Yeah. Yeah, so
do the IV?
They had to do everything.
Uh-huh.
Because I lost a lot of blood and I have a metal plate in my chin from here to here from that incident. They had to do reconstructive surgery on my jaw right here.
No way.
I lost these two front teeth, and so while my mouth was wired shut, that I would order like Oreo milkshakes from Carl's Jr. and just I put the straw right through the teeth that were missing, and I would just drink those every day for a month.
Fuck.
Yeah, dude.
Did you get all fat like shakes every day?
No, I got super skinny.
Oh, because you're just not eating anything else.
Yeah, I was super skinny.
Man, that seems super unhealthy.
I had to get my mom to, like, you know, like, blend chicken up. And, like, so I could drink that.
Like chicken broth or something?
So she got, like, chicken strips from KFC, put them in a blender, and a little bit of broth, and put them in, like a shake cup, and so I could eat that. And it was disgusting. Don't ever try that ever. Don't ever try that.
Well, is it just like chicken soup?
It could be, but I wanted to feel like I'm eating like a fried chicken, you know? So I told her to get some KFC and do that. And it was horrible.
Oh my God. Chicken shake. Hey, now it's on. Really? Fuck chicken bone, chicken shake. Oh man, dude, I'm glad you're okay. Was that gnarlier than your most recent injury? Was that the gnarliest thing that's happened to you?
That's the gnarliest thing that's ever happened to me, for sure.
Fuck.
I've
and
never
it's just kind of fucking around.
Yeah.
It's what always freaks. Happens. Like, I skate, I try all this gnarly shit, and then I kill myself fucking jumping off a 5-stair miniature golf.
Yeah. One of those freak accidents where it's just like, why did that even happen? You know, like, what? Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I had to replace a lot of stuff, man. I had to go through like for years of just like no teeth. You know, I had to use like this retainer with teeth in it and like pop it in and right. before I got implants and stuff like that, and you know, go through that whole shebang. Yeah, that was a mission.
Oh my God, dude. So what happened with this other one? You said you were at P-Rod's Park or something, right? And you landed back on the board and then you blew out your ankle or something?
Yeah, it was my ankle and my foot. So I was trying to half cap flip down the double set, kicked out, but I didn't know like the board was still under my feet and I'm like dangling. And as I like come down the ground, I like land back onto the board. One foot does, my right foot. And I you know, like the board turned a different way and I sat on my foot as the board turned and I ended up like tweaking my whole foot, swelled up to the size of a big old football. And I was done for a year and a half. Yeah, it took a year and a half to get back to back to where I am now. So
at least you didn't have to do chicken shakes.
No, facts, man.
What are you doing on your downtime? Probably just becoming a DJ, like super getting into that, right?
Yeah, so it's crazy how things work, man. So I was able to focus on my clothing brand, World Premiere, and then I was able to do a lot more DJing, man. Like I was getting hit up to do so much stuff during that time that I was hurt. And, you know, it was a blessing to be able, you know, to do that while I was hurt. So it kind of made up for it.
Red.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about your World Premiere, the clothing brand. Like, what's up with that? Where's that? Is that like your shit?
Yes. Yeah, it's my brand. I started it during the pandemic while we're all just sitting there on our nuts, like trying to figure out what's going on. I just was like, no, I need to do something. I've built so much. I feel like I've built so much within skateboarding of myself. Like, I feel like that I need to do something to give back to the community and the kids that follow me. So I was like, let me start a brand. And, I was just thinking of names and I was just watching TV one day and somebody was, I think it was like an old MTV commercial. It was like world premiere of this music video. And I was like, dang, that's it right there.
Yeah.
And, my boy went over to his house, Hugo, and we just came up with some designs and we made like 5 or 6. And yeah, I was like, yeah, all right, these are the ones right here. And we just brought it to life, put it on some clothes. And then, started it in 2020 and, or actually the end of 2021.
Like during lockdown.
During lockdown. Yeah. End of 2021. So it's been around for a year and just slowly building.
Is it all soft goods? Like hats, hoodies, shirts?
Hats, hoodies, shirts, socks. Yeah, sweatpants for right now.
What's the most popular? T-shirts or do people like beanies or hats? Like what are people gravitating towards?
They like these sweaters right here. They like this logo. The logo is like a ticket logo, but I run both of them. But yeah, they like this a lot. So the meaning behind it is the journey is everything. So like we're talking about. Like my whole journey has just been insane. You know what I mean? Like from slow to now. And I just put that in perspective as like the journey is everything. You have to go through all these different obstacles sometimes to get to your world premiere. once you get there, it's up to you to take it to wherever else you want to go. But the journey is everything.
That's what I always tell kids. They're asking me always tips, you know, like what can, and you're like, I'm always like, hey, figure out what you want to do. Stick with that and you'll do it. There's a good chance that if you know what you want to do and have the passion for it, you can do it. Yeah. Half the battle is figuring out what the hell you want to do and actually really wanting to do it, not being like flavor of the month. You know, it's like, no, I want to fucking do this and I'm going to do it. And having that drive, no one can stop you but yourself.
You kill it.
100%, man. And if you have a vision to do something, it's always best to take your vision and run with that, like you said, and to go full force, because you got to tell a story. You have to be able to the one to tell a story. You know, you can't get the opinions of others. You know, you got to really look within yourself and your intuition and trust it and just go full ham on it. And,
yeah, no, for yeah. real. Yeah. Yeah, man. I think a lot of people's confidence is low, including mine. Like I've never been an overconfident person, but confidence is super important to just know in yourself what you're capable of doing. I think like that's, and it's rad to see like you're branching out and you're showing like, I did this on a skateboard. I did this on, you know, DJing. Now I'm doing this with my clothing brand. Like I have the drive. I know I can do it. And that builds your confidence for your next journey, whatever it may be.
Oh yeah. 100%. Especially from, you know, especially from being flow for so many years and skateboarding, you know, it's like, dang, you got to really have the drive and the persistence to keep going. Cause like you said, a lot of people will stop and just be like, I'm over it. You know, I've seen that happen a lot of times where, if it doesn't happen in a certain amount of time, they quit. I mean, that's the key to anything. Like the patience you got to have, it's just getting over the hump. That's, if you really want it, it's all about getting over that last little hump. And once you do, like all the doors open. And that's what I've seen from what I've had to go through or what I had to get through to get to this point. So, and that's always instilled in my brain. It's just like, you just got to keep going no matter what.
Yeah. That seems like what your story has been. Do you guys sponsor other people or is it kind of like is it becoming a team or is it like just a business thing?
It's definitely just super small right now. I have a couple of guys that I hook up within skating, but my goal is to get it to there.
Okay.
I have, just generating enough, you know, money to do all that, you know, to go on little trips and stuff here and there. But my goal is to have skating and music all joint to one, to where it's just like everything. Yeah. It's not strictly skateboarding, but it's definitely involving all the things that I do within other people's lives too. You know, like what they do, and so it's like an overall like a different like it's everyone's involved in the company pretty much.
I could see some like Eric B shit or something. What world premiere? World premiere? Like I could see it, dude.
Yeah, man. That's tight.
What are the essentials for each genre? Let's talk hip hop, classic rock, like dub or whatever. Like what are like three essentials that you need for like, I gotta bring these.
Number one is definitely hip hop. I do like dance music. So that's number two.
But I mean, let's say tonight's a hip hop show.
Okay.
Are you bringing EPMD? Are you bringing Wu-Tang? Like these are definitely already in there.
Nowadays it's different. You know what I mean? Like,
do you have to ask?
No, I have to study like what kids are listening to nowadays, you know?
Okay.
So I have to be, you know, if it's the Playboy Cardis, if it's like Lil Uzi Vert, it's like stuff like that. That's what the generation now is listening to.
Lil Uzi Vert's big, right?
Really big, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Like those type of guys, you know what I mean? Definitely mixed in with like a little bit of classic Jay-Z, you know, Kanye. They kids love Kanye West.
Damn.
Yeah, so it's different from like early 2000s to now. You know, I could get away with playing like a lot of the Nas and stuff like that. But now it's just like a whole different type of world. So
like, obviously I'm older, but the classic stuff to me always is forever. Like you can always put on Tribe Called Quest and be stoked, or like my thinking is like you put on Tribe, you get like a groove, and then you just hit them with Public Enemy. Like that's the vibe that I have.
Definitely, you know, the generation is different. So you know, like what was good 10 years ago is still good, you know, in the older hip hop heads,
Yeah.
The younger kids are not listening to that. In a sense, you have to put them onto that, which is super rad. You know, like skate events, like for sure, like EPMD, Tribe, all that works all the time. But if you're doing like a club or like a bar night, you've got to be more modern with it.
You got to be hip. Yeah.
Yeah. It's got to be. Yeah. And today's music is not the same as before. So it's a little bit harder to listen to it sometimes, but these kids love it. So
what do the kids love most? Like, is trap, like what's the thing that like most kids are really into right now?
Yeah, definitely the trap for sure. Yeah. They love
Waka
that,
Flocka
that.
Or like,
they'll listen to Waka, but he's kind of like,
he's older now.
He's like an older guy now. So it's like, yeah, it's like, dang, that wasn't even that long ago. But
The Uzi, right?
Uzi, this guy named Yeet. There's a lot of them, dude. Like all those, like, you know, like Ish Sapita and all those guys, they know all like the new trap stuff. So
okay.
Yeah.
Wow, man. Dude, that's sick though. It seems like you're staying busy and staying up and staying positive, and like you got a lot of cool shit going on. I did see on Instagram you're done with Blind.
Yeah.
That
came to an end, man. You know, Dwindle's going through a whole bunch of stuff right now. There's a lot of legal.
Are they collapsing? Because I know, what was it? Weiss's company. That was crazy to see, like, Weiss getting fired or whatever, and then the whole team quit.
Yeah,
it was like, dude, how are you gonna fire the dude that like this thing won't even happen without the dude, like
without him. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of legal stuff happening over at Dwindle.
Oh.
It's like they're getting sued and they owe a lot of people money, including me.
Including you?
Yeah, man. So
shit.
There's this big lawsuit going on right now. And I don't know if I can speak on it like too much, but it's a lot. And they definitely are in a bad spot right now. So, you know, yeah, it's pretty nuts.
How hard was that for you? Was it pretty like obvious or was it hard?
I think it was kind of more mutual. You know, it was kind of like, you know, I'm doing my thing outside of skating and they're not really pushing it too hard anyways too. So I'm just kind of sitting there anyways. So, but then on the top of the legal stuff, it was kind of like no brainer. Like, all right, cool. But
do you look at it as you're a free agent or as a retirement?
To be honest, I don't even know. I have no idea.
Like, you're still going to skate. You're a skateboarder.
Yeah. Like, if companies wanted to put me on, like, I have so much more in the tank that I can give, but I'm not going to do it just for no reason. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to just, like, break myself. Only for my brand, I will. But other than that, like, I already, you know, it's no point. But I skate all the time and, you know, I still love it. It's got to be a reason for me to even to put something out.
Yeah, it's in your blood. You're not going to stop rolling. I mean, I'm sure like whether you're getting free boards or not or whatever, you're still going to have one and roll around and fucking, I'm sure your legs are probably like happy that maybe you're not having to like jump down the biggest shit necessarily all the time.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Because you pay for it later on in life, man. And I'm not saying that I'm done doing it, but I'm kind of lucky to be able to get out of it a little bit unscathed, you know, because it does catch up to you later on if you don't take care of yourself.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah. So where are you at now? You're in Long Beach or where are you?
I'm in San Bernardino right now, but I'm moving back to LA later this year. So,
okay.
Yeah.
How's San Bernardino?
It's the desert.
Yeah. It's a little east. Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool. It's peaceful.
You're kind of by what's Riverside?
Dude, I'm in Victorville. So I'm even higher up there.
That's Brian Herman country, right?
Yeah, he lives in Hesperia. So he's right over there. So yeah.
Oh shit. Oh damn.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you got cooking, like anything that you're like working on or like dreaming of or cooking up? You're just getting into the music stuff, yeah?
Getting into the music stuff. And my goal is to film a lot more for my brand and to put out like something, but I'm not going to say like it's 100% thing. I definitely just want to like ease myself into it.
Right.
But you know, I want to give back to the fans because I posted that thing on Instagram and, you know, I got so much love from that. And I was like, dang, I got to come back in a sense and do something. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you know, to stay in touch with me anytime I can be of help, or if you just want to vent or talk or anything, I'm around, you know that.
Yeah, man. I appreciate that.
Yeah. It's good catching up with you. I really appreciate the time and, hearing your story and stuff. It's fucking really cool. And I hope it's an inspiration for a lot of people.
Yeah, man. I hope so too, dude. Cause the journey is everything, guys.
Yeah, for real though. Yeah, man. We always end the show with a song, and it can be anything, like whatever. Like if you want to plug like some from Hobson, or like just something that you grew up liking, or just your favorite song that you listen to a lot right now, or just whatevs.
Yeah. Lately I've been listening to a lot of Biggie. So Notorious B.I.G., Unbelievable.
How do these fuckers have footage of everything, but they don't know how that Vegas shit went down? Like, you know, there was footage of that somewhere. Like, there's cameras everywhere in Vegas.
Yeah. Do they know? They know who killed them. They know who. The dude is actually on YouTube talking about it.
No way.
Yeah. Cause now I guess he signed like, what's it called? Where you're free from everything. Immunity. That's what it's called. Immunity. So he's able to talk about it, but it's all like gang stuff
but
that happened.
Cause he's probably, yeah. People want to kill him probably. Right.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. That was a crazy time in music history, dude. I was a little kid at that time, but I think it was like 7 or 8, uh-huh. But I was looking at Tupac on TV every day. Like, dude, this guy's out of control, but I love him.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Oh, that's inspo. Oh man. Well, cool, man. It's good catching up. We'll fucking throw on some Biggie and, continue doing what you're doing, and you know, I wish you nothing but success.
I appreciate it. Hey, likewise too.
Take care of yourself, man.
My man.
Stay up, Kevin. Good to talk to you.
You too. Cheers. Talk to you soon.
Later.
Live from Bedford Stuyvesant, the livest one. Representing BK to the fullest. Gats I pull it. Bastards ducking when Big B bucking. Chicken heads be clucking in my bathroom fucking. It ain't nothing. They know Big B handling with the Mac in the act or paneling. Bandaging MCs. Oxygen, they can't breathe. Mad tricks up the sleeve. Wear boxes so my dick can breathe. Breeze through in the Q45 by my side. Lyrical high. And those that rushes my clutches get put on crutches. Get smoked like touches from the master. Hate to blast ya, but I have to. You see, I smoke a lot. Your life is played out like Farme and them fucking polka dots. Who rock the spot? Biggie, you know how the weed go. Unbelievable. Biggie, also known as the Bon Appetit. Rappers can't sleep, need sleeping. Big keep creeping, bullets heat sinking. Casualties need treating, dumb rappers need teaching. Lesson A, don't fuck with B.I., that's that, O.I. Thought he was whack, oh come now. Why y'all so dumb now? Hunt me or be hunted. I got 357 ways to simmer saute. I'm the winner all day. Lights get dimmer down Biggie's hallway. My forte causes Caucasians to say he sounds demented. Call we scented. If I said it, I meant it. Bite my tongue for no one. Call me evil or unbelievable. Alexis coupes leave no witnesses. What you think this is? Ain't no amateurs here. I damage and tear. MCs fear me. They too near not to hear me. Clearly, I'm the triple beam dream. 1,000 grams of uncut to the gut. It seems no killer. The gas by your liver, your upper lip quiver. You're ready to die, tell God I said hi. And throw down some ice for the nicest MC. Niggas know the steelo, unbelievable.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talking Schmidt. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts. When you subscribe, you'll get notifications every Tuesday of new episodes the minute they become available. Also, please leave reviews and a 5-star rating. It's the best way to help the show grow. All of the episodes will always remain free, but if you would like to help support the show, you can do so at talkingschmidt.com. where you can pick up some merchandise like t-shirts, beanies, hats, and stickers. The website has an entire archive of all of the episodes, with extra photos and videos. Email us with any suggestions, comments, or ways that the show may have improved your life at talkingschmidt@gmail.com. All interviews are conducted, edited, and produced by Schmitty. The intro music is Mary's Cross by the band Nature. A very special shout out goes to the executive director, Cheryl Camisa.
Shout out.
Love it!
This is Talking Schmidt, where the Rolodex is deep, but the conversation is deeper.
Keep the wheels greased.